This next episode of We Sound Crazy is brought to you in part by Nashville Music City.
We sound crazy.
But she still gon' give it up. She likes it my way.
Wow.
Wow.
25 years ago.
Listen.
Jeez. But welcome to another season. Kickoff.
We back.
We sound crazy.
I'm about to say, we not just back. We back as we sound crazy.
We sound crazy.
So everybody, we're back. You know, we did a limited run under the umbrella of State of Black Music, where we did specials for our partners at the National Museum of African American Music here in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. But we sound crazy. We back.
We still do
specials for under the moniker of State of Black Music in the future, probably throughout the year. But We Sound Crazy is back in full steam, full force.
Ready to talk our shit.
Ready to talk, man.
We ain't going nowhere either.
We might as well reintroduce ourselves.
We should probably reintroduce ourselves. I just jumped right in.
This is
Phil Thornton, a.k.a. Philionaire.
Claude Kelly, the one and only.
Chuck Harmony is in the building.
Timon Bacon from Macon. What's going on, y'all?
Man, we back. And listen, what a way to start.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is about to be a crazy conversation. Listen. You feel what I'm saying to you?
It's insane. That song you heard coming in the intro, after the intro, Usher's My Way.
Yeah, man.
We got two special guests on the episode. Two. Not one, but two.
And then not just two legends.
Two legends. We're going to say legends.
We're going to say two legends. So make sure you tell people that We Sound Crazy brings the heat.
We bring the noise.
Because, speaking of My Way, you might as well just go ahead and tell them what time it is, because it's been 25 years. It's been a long time coming to talk about this one.
So this week, y'all, we are celebrating My Way. It came out September 16th, 1997. But our special guest this week, two legends, the one and only Usher.
Hello.
Is with us this week.
Usher.
And our brother, and also a legend.
Legend.
Jermaine Dupri is with us.
Y'all know what this is.
I got a question for y'all.
Yeah.
So in 97, around the time that record came out, I want to hear from each one of y'all, and I'll tell mine too. What were y'all doing around that time? Like, what was happening in each of y'all's lives?
Good Lord. He's like, dig deep.
So the thing is, for me, My Way to me has a certain sentimental value because I was interning at Arista Records at that time.
Wow.
Arista was the parent company for LaFace. So I was a part of the promotions team promoting My Way. I had all the vinyl and we had the CDs and just services. So it was, and I met Usher during that album. I didn't meet him on the first one. It was like right before when You Make Me Wanna was taken off. So I met him and Janetta. Shout out to Janetta Patton, Usher's mom and manager at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just, that's where I met them and just saw this take off. So I worked those records on a mix show level, on a just local promotional level in the Mid-Atlantic. And yeah, so that's my memory. That's my historical context with My Way.
Oh, man.
I was on the Chitlin' Circuit. I was in Alabama with my Casio keyboard making some money.
Oh, my God. I was in New York City, and it was like, this is the music that pulled me out of my... It was... when you were in New York back then, it was bad boy everything, right?
Mm.
So it took something really big to pull me out of that haze, right? And a lot of that was what was happening at LaFace and what was happening at So Def. So I was obsessed with the music business. So I was taking notes on who wrote it, who mixed it, what label it came from, and walking around New York City on the weekends to pass the labels and all that stuff. I was obsessed. This is part of the reason why I'm in the music business, is these albums around this time were the ones that made me do the homework.
Right.
Behind the scenes. So that's what it has a special place in my heart, because it's how I fell in love with not music, but the business of music.
And it's so crazy because just you saying that, because I was also a credit reader.
Mm-hmm.
And just you saying that reminded me of how many times I saw LaFace on my favorite music.
Yeah.
Just music. Because you saw a lot of labels, but LaFace in particular, how the LaFace was written. I just remember that.
That font.
Yeah, the font.
Yo, my yearbook said several years back then, like, What's Claude gonna turn to? Is like he's gonna get a job at LaFace Records. That's how obsessed I was.
I wanted a job at LaFace Records too.
You did?
Yeah.
So that's not, man,
just
they
cold
were,
turkey. Just went up there. Me and my singing group.
Wow. Are you serious?
Trying to get a record deal.
Chuck Harmon, you just showed up at LaFace.
No, but I did the same thing
uninvited.
In New York.
Uninvited.
I did the same thing.
We
in New
didn't
York.
Get in.
I did the same thing in New York. I went into the label one Saturday, not really understanding what the business was. And went in there and saw like the big frames of Usher and TLC and Toni Braxton, pick up the in office phone, security picked up. I'm like, hi, I'm here to get a record deal with LA and Baby. They were like, young man, get out of the building, right? Leave the building right now, or we're calling the cops. But it was the hunger back then was real.
It was real, bro.
The passion.
I remember being in fifth grade, actually the summer leading into fifth grade, 97-98 school year. I never forget it. And that Christmas, my mom got me that CD, and I still have that same exact copy to this day. It's probably scratched to the max. Can't even.
It's probably scratched.
But I just remember feeling like, because Usher had been gone for a minute, because that first album came out in '94, and we like the album went platinum at our house. Like, but of course, you know, no one really shows love to the first album. So it was like, okay, he went away for a minute and then he just kind of came back with this splash with You Make Me Want It. And it was just like, he looked different. Like it was just, you could feel the new energy from Usher. And
Elevation.
That's why you always got to give Jermaine Dupri highest respect as a producer, because Usher was in with the top on his first album. And so in order to get to the next level, he had to go to a next level visionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what he did. So he always got my ultimate respect.
I mean, the way Usher just, like, how they slipped out of the shoes, like, we.
I'm telling you, man.
Forever, we were trying to, like, figure out how he slipped out of the shoes.
Listen, I'm still trying to get it right.
I
never mastered that.
I can't even slip out these Yeezys, probably.
Crazy. Wait a minute. Isn't there supposed to be some kind of, like, Bad Boy, So Def? Is that a versus? Is that happening? Or some kind of celebration?
I mean, I hear rumors, but
is there rumors, rumblings?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Who you got, Fillionaire? Bad Boy or So Def?
So Bad Boy all day. Bad Boy all day long.
You don't want no smoke?
I love both. It's just both have contributed so much to music and to culture.
Yeah.
I've worked closer with the Bad Boy team, but I got a lot of friends in the So Def Camp, Escape and DeBrat. Those are my folks. So it's just like, but the impact you can't deny in Jermaine's work with Mariah, who's also an extended So Def family member.
And
Monica. So it's close. But I just think the idea of a celebration of both So Def and Bad Boy is needed. What's your favorite song on My Way? You got a favorite?
I Will.
Come on, man. That's my favorite, man.
Yo, get out of here, man. I'll pay a penny for your thoughts. Mm-hmm. A nickel for your kiss. You know that I will. Yeah, that record still feels good.
What's your favorite, Chuck?
Slow Jams.
With Monica.
Featuring my girl Monica. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's...
Gunica.
I was telling Phil offline that that's my favorite version of that song.
Over the Midnight Star version.
It's not offline no more.
That one feels good.
Man.
R&B.
Man, I got chills just now when that chorus came in. No lie, I got chills.
That's it.
Phil, what's your favorite? I Will as well? Or do you have something else to offer?
I would say overall, Nice and Slow is my favorite, but lately I Will... I Will then was my joint because, you know, that's the VA and me. Shout out to Teddy and Chauncey, the Blackstreet Brothers, Eric Williams, they were all on the album. So I Will would be the one that you wouldn't expect. But my favorite is got to be Nice and Slow. Got on Nice, you know.
I mean.
Kind of the.
Yo, where was Usher at 7? Like. O'clock on the dot?
It's 7 o'clock on the dot. I'm in my drop top.
In the streets.
Man, that record still feels good.
So good.
The video was epic too.
Yeah.
Hype Williams.
Kamora Lee was
in Paris.
Video.
In Paris.
Filmed in Paris. You feel what I'm saying to you? I'm with Phil. I Will is my deep cut, But You Make Me Want is my favorite.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, the way that, it's not even a long album. It's just perfectly complete.
I was going to say that. I was like, it's 9 songs in a remix.
Yeah.
And it's like.
With all my faves on there. Lil Kim's on there.
They remix You Make Me Wanna.
Yeah.
And they didn't overstate. You know how some albums feel like, you know, they just really overstate. They welcome like, y'all running out.
Yeah.
This was a to the point rec album. Mm-hmm. 1 to 10. You didn't feel like it was too brief. You didn't feel like it was too long. It was just right.
When I hear Usher, them records and the records now, I get offended for him. Because I'm like, mm-hmm. how dare y'all have discussions about who's the best singer, who's the best everything, and not have met on your Mount Rushmore, your top of your list.
Listen, not even after the show that I went to in Vegas, but like, I mean, he's always been one of my favorites, but like, to me, he's literally the king of R&B.
How was the show?
I implore anyone between now and next year, if you can get to Vegas to go see Usher's residency at Dolby Live, like, please make plans to go. Like, it's literally, like, I was on my feet the entire time. I walked away super inspired. Like, the mic was on the entire time. Mm. And dude is, like, you got, and I'm... It's really no shade to the younger people, but you got people in their 20s and 30s that can't handle long tours and they feel burnt out. And Usher is 41?
Mm-hmm. In his 40s.
In his 40s. And is still like from the top of the show to the end, like he gave 110%, 1,000%.
Without giving away too much, what was the highlight for you? Like, what was that? Yo, this was perfect.
The highlight for me, because I'm from Georgia and I've always wanted to be, even as a kid, immersed in like the Atlanta skate culture.
Mm.
The part where, you know, there's a portion of the show where they come out on the stage and they're skating. They skated through a lot of the show, but like, Don't Waste My Time and like just a lot of the choreography during those parts were dope. He had a lot of strippers on stage, so I liked that part.
Why you try to glaze past that part?
I mean, because my mama might be listening.
Your mama knows you like
mama.
Strippers.
Mama.
And I like the fact that he doesn't hold, like, he goes out into the audience and he's playing, like, all of these different R&B records and he's bringing people out. Like, during our show, he brought Tyga out. Still a little indifferent on that choice.
You weren't feeling Tyga?
I mean, it was cool during the moment, but I'm like,
Tyga make hits.
See, Timon's still salty because he wanted to be there when Tevin was there.
Right.
That's where this is stemming from. He saw the Tevin Campbell post the next night.
It was the next night that Tevin came.
I missed him again.
That's crazy.
By one day.
But
much love to Tyga, though.
I love the fact that before the show, like, they set it up, they set the vibe up properly, because before the show, you walk in, they're literally blasting like all these R&B hits. I was there by myself. I made friends with everybody in my section. We were just having a good time.
That's awesome.
Like, it felt like a family reunion, a black ass family reunion for real.
That's dope.
Well, I'm here for it.
With white folks sprinkled throughout.
I can't wait.
Yes.
The white folks sprinkled throughout.
I'm going in October. I'm going to check out the last night in
2022.
Yeah, this year.
Because then there's more dates in 23, right?
Yeah, so it's back up in March.
I think I'm going to catch the 23.
We sound crazy.
Well, I think we should get into the conversation with the man himself, the man of the hour.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's rare to get a legend, so.
Let's do it. Let's check out this conversation. Usher, My Way 25, We Sound Crazy.
Woo.
Crazy.
All right, so this week's special guest was born in Dallas, Texas, but raised in Chattanooga, right here in Tennessee.
Yes, sir. See.
He's released 8 solo studio albums to date, 79 singles, including 19 as a featured artist.
Sheesh.
An eight-time Grammy Award winner.
Wow.
Ocho.
He's had 9 Billboard Hot 100 number one singles as a lead artist and 18 Hot 100 top 10 singles. He's sold over 100 million total records worldwide. One of the best-selling artists of our time. He's currently headlining a sold-out run in Vegas, My Way. And right now, today, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of his now 7 times certified platinum album, My Way. You got to edit this one for the radio version. We going to make some motherfucking noise.
Make some noise.
For the king of R&B.
You feel what I'm saying to you?
Usher Raymond is in the building.
Man, with an introduction like that, man, I don't know what I can say now.
We just want to put some respect on you. But Usher, I got it. Before we jump in, man, I saw you at L.A. Reid's house in June, and we talked about the podcast in the museum. And I said, man, I don't know if Usher really, you know, if he was telling the truth that day, if he's going to be honest. But I got to tell y'all right here, he's on the show and excited about the possibilities of what we're building with the museum to celebrate your legacy. So thank you, my brother, for joining us.
Yeah, man.
Well, you know what, man? I'm happy to be of assistance, you know, to, you know, establishment. I think, you know, far more than just the ability to be culture. Every chance we get to celebrate the past, the people, you know, the contribution, whether it's creative or just our moving the ball forward as we progress as African-Americans,
yeah,
as native Black Americans, is an opportunity for growth. So I'm happy to celebrate what I've been able to do with the success of my career and also to the endorsement of all the people who made it happen, rather celebrating the music or just, you know, enjoying it and being inspired by it. I ain't do it by myself. As a host of a grand, a lot of people,
yeah,
you know, who've been a part of it. And man, I'm just happy to be able to be here to talk about it and to also continue to keep adding to that legacy. 25 years is not something to take lightly.
It is not.
You don't really think about it and understand the reality of it until you think of it in like human years.
Right.
That means I got a 25-year-old child
right now.
You know what I'm saying? Has gone on, you know, and got its masters. You know what I'm saying? If 3 years or 3 million is what you would consider like, you know, freshman, sophomore or junior into, you know, into senior, we made it 7. So I'm real proud of of what that meant for me. And, you know, now to look at the reality of between 1987 and that date of creation of My Way, what it has meant, and what it will mean in history, man.
We sound crazy.
You're often celebrated for your songs, but more importantly, you're celebrated for your albums, i.e. My Way. So as it relates to your next masterpiece, musically, what do you plan on exploring as a grown man that you didn't get a chance to explore as a young man?
Well, man, I don't know if it has ever been about maturing. I think the freedom, you know, of my childhood and creating from the place of authenticity is where I hope, you know, I can continue to be as I create new ideas, as I explore the new concepts of my life and the new chapters of my life, and rather I choose to write them down or find ways to creatively talk about pieces of them through, you know, other mediums, rather it's movies or rather it's books, or whatever it might be. But I'm just hoping that I can remain as youthful, you know what I'm saying, and as creative, because that's where magic happens. If I think back to when My Way was created, the thing that makes it what it is the fact that I felt this freedom to just express myself outside of how people saw me or how the establishment that was a record company or either one individual saw me. I fought for what it is that I felt I needed to say. And I performed in a way that I felt was relevant based off of my influence and the places that I had gone. So now the future hopefully is brighter than the past. And the moment is what we have to make something incredible to be remembered forever, you know?
Forever.
Yes, forever.
Crazy!
I want to get into just the musical nerdy side for a second, because the studio songwriter in me, I was listening to the album, and this is before this is before auto-tune, right? This is before, like, all the tricks we have now. And if you listen back to it, it's pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Its harmonies are perfect. Expression and musicality is on a level that most people still can't match.
Girl, there's something I want you to know. Whenever I'm near you, my love just comes down.
So I'm curious to know, what influenced you going into the My Way project? Because you were younger, but I mean, you could always hear that you had a big history in your mind creatively about music. So who were you listening to? What were you drawing from? What kind of artists were you chasing when you were creating this album? Because it's a classic. I'm curious to know what were your influences for My Way.
Well, I would say this, man. It was hard in those times because we didn't have as many devices to kind of perfect us. And the imperfections of that moment are what we love more than anything. And the fact that we fought to be as great sounding and as perfectly pitched, because we just didn't have access to that type of technology. And to earn your keep as an artist, as a singer, as a creative, you had to be authentic.
Right.
You know, for me, this has always been about me being a student of the game, or anybody being successful, being a student of the game. So I paid attention to what was going on, not only, you know, in current culture, to begin to redefine, you know, what R&B could be shaped up to be, where R&B and hip hop were merging at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I try my hardest not to lose the classic nature of what it was to be an R&B artist.
Mm.
Those R&B artists that I was inspired by were Donny Hathaway, were Stevie Wonder, were Luther Vandross, were Prince, were Michael Jackson, were, you know, Teddy Pendergrass, were Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Were Sam Cooke, you know, and they didn't have no damn auto-tune back there.
No right. Damn auto-tune.
So you had to be able to hold a note, and furthermore have the patience to sit in that studio hours on end, take after take, because we also too didn't have as much technology. We were either performing on like ADATs, or, you know what I'm saying, or like even actual reel to reel tape.
Right.
So you had to study. You had to be prepared before you came to the studio. You had to make sure that you were prepared to stand in that booth and not waste money, not waste people's time, and be prepared. Do the work so that you could go in there and get it. And it wasn't just about, you know, I ain't even caring about being as perfect as I possibly can, because I'm being as, you know, as authentic and real. And don't get me wrong, that then also to produce is something great in this time. But I can't take away what you were talking about. When you hear like, yo, that really sounds great, pitch perfect, or at least as perfect as it can be. And we ain't manipulate none of the songs.
Mm.
We didn't change the keys or a line or you know what I'm saying? Or you know, melodyne.
Vocal line. Vocal line.
You know, vocal line and melodyne the songs to perfection. We really had to do the work in order to make it as great as it could be, you know, as a product. A product that, you know, the legacy artists that we were inspired by would respect. And they would give us, you know, at least a pat on the back to say, young blood, you're doing it in the right direction. Keep up the good work. And also to have a host of people buy your albums and sell millions of copies.
Yeah.
So that work was really in being a student, man. It was about being a student and trying to be as great as the greats.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
You can hear it.
Yeah.
And you can tell that you carried that mentality through obviously all the rest of the albums, but it makes a difference, man. Like excellence, black excellence, but just working hard. Because a lot of albums back then don't stand up that way. They don't sound as good. But
not at all.
Your music's, I meant that. That pitch, yeah, and the emotion, it stands up, and it will stand up for many, many generations to come.
Yeah.
I mean, you never think about the work that you're putting in as value until it crescendos and shows itself to be valuable in time. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if I felt like it was worth it or not worth it. I just knew I had to earn my keep.
Mm.
So the vocal coaching, the time, listening to those songs, understanding cadence and beginning to like embody it and plant that in my song so that you would be like, oh man, this feels like Stevie. This feels like Marvin. This feels like Prince.
Yeah.
This feels like Michael. This feels like, you know, those guys who were creating timeless music. It's because you have to be a student if you want to be great. You got to be a student if you want to create things that are going to last forever.
Yeah.
We sound crazy.
I got a two-part question for you, Usher. What was the first song you recorded for My Way? Do you remember the first song?
Probably a song that didn't even make it.
Didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut.
Yeah, what's crazy is with JD and I, right? We most of the time, we go in the lab and we just work on songs. And the project begins to take shape the more he hears where my voice is. And also, too, we begin to develop what we're going to talk about, because it's a conceptual thing. Like, we live in each other's spaces. You know what I'm saying? We talk to each other. We send each other vocal notes. You know what I'm saying? If we have an idea, we share a conversation about, you know, the idea and concept and to develop it. And then we start placing melody to words or either idea, you know, on paper to see if it makes sense. Mm. He'll go in and he'll start to write and he'll, you know, he'll start to put it together. And then I'll come in the studio and listen to his demo, which sometimes is really funny to listen to. But I have a way of interpreting what I hear him do.
Right.
And it comes out absolutely perfect because he just knows my voice so well.
Yeah. Y'all's chemistry is crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that chemistry is like none other. It's like Quincy and Michael, man.
Yeah, man, for sure.
That's exactly what it's like.
So, Usher, at the time, coming off of the first album, which we hear at the We Sound Crazy show, we love the first album. Thank You.
All the time I think of you, holding on to someone new.
Can You Get With It? I mean, we've been playing.
Come on, man. That's classic, too.
But commercially, it didn't necessarily live up to everyone's expectations. Did you feel a certain pressure going into My Way to really just to be that much stronger? Like, what was that? What were you feeling at that time? Like, coming off the first album, going into My Way. Did you feel the pressure?
I would say that My Way was just as significant and important as any album, if not one of the most important, because it gave me the fundamentals of what it would be to be an artist. Mm. Who I got my hustle from was Puff. Mm. Who okay. I got my ability to blend those worlds together and be authentic was really Puff, because I was in the middle of hip hop. I was the baby of Bad Boy, and I wasn't a Bad Boy artist, but I was there at the, you know, kind of the fruition of him going, you know, into, you know, his solo journey. He had left Uptown Records and L.A. Reid gave him a shot to, you know, go after my album, and later on gave him, you know, an introduction to Clive Davis. And before you know it, you know, Bad Boy became what it was. But what I saw was the hustle. What I saw was the worlds coming together. What I saw and received from that moment was credibility from, you know, an audience that would create like a solid foundation for me to stand on for years. You know, rather Bad Boy or Nas's clique, or, you know what I'm saying, any of them guys, they knew and saw, oh yeah, that's Baby Boo, that's the kid who used to be with Puff. And even though we didn't have success at like the way that we wanted, it gave me something to strive to fight for. If I were given everything the first time, I would have one what's called, you know, the freshman jinx.
Yeah.
Or the sophomore jinx.
Sophomore, yeah.
And it would have been an uphill battle. But for me, it was like, oh no, it starts with an uphill battle.
Mm.
That means I'm working from the beginning and the show must go on. That means I got to fight in order for you to see me. I got to make sure that if it ain't the record that made you love me, when you saw me perform live and you heard me, you know I gave it my all. And you know I was built and cut from the same cloth as the guys who were the pioneers. You know, and it wasn't a failed effort. It was literally like when I played Think of You, and I still have fans that love my first album. They're like, yo, it was classics on that album. Can You Get With It?
Can You Get With It?
Can You Get With It, my dude? Come on, man.
Can You Get With It? You wanna love the joy I bring.
Classic.
But being able to be mentored by guys like Devontae Swing and Timbaland at the time, and Faith Evans,
yeah,
and Kyle West, and you know, the guys, Kenny from Intro, all of those guys who were writing for me and writing songs with me, or either for me, because I really wasn't writing yet and I didn't know what to talk about. I just said, okay, here I am, a 13-year-old artist, and I'm trying to figure out how to fit into the shape that they make for me.
Yeah.
It then made me clear, like, okay, I now know that that didn't fit me, and maybe it was just a little bit too advanced for where people were, because, you know, it was a lot for a 13-year-old artist to have some of the conversations that I was having.
Right.
And, you know, most of the time you would expect the 13-year-old artist to talk about shit that was relevant to him, the types of things that he would experience. But by the way, I was also too experiencing some of that shit. You know what I'm saying?
He's like, it's a true story.
You know, falling in love with a girl for the first time. And, you know, and when I talked to Al B. Sure about what that felt like, he created it many ways. You know what I'm saying? And we connected. We made things that meant something for the foundation of my career. And again, one of the most meaningful moments was that. Yeah, the success is great because I worked hard for it, and JD and I figured out something that we could market, sell, and also to would be believable. But my introduction was you getting to just know that, yo, I'm a worker. Like I'm gonna go out here and I'm gonna earn them screams. I could remember performing on like damn near street corners.
Yeah.
At Summerfest and stuff like that, just because I was trying to break. We were trying to, you know, to get in. Crazy.
I had a conversation with L.A. Reid several years ago when we worked together on a bunch of stuff. And he said something very profound to me that always stuck with me. He said, since Michael Jackson, the only original black artists, male artists, I should say, I'm sorry, male artists are you and R. Kelly, who are original. And now that the conversation is going on about the king of R&B and who's the best and all that stuff, I'm starting to see you claim it in a way that I love, because you are the best R&B, male R&B and beyond R&B, but you are the best artist. So I'm curious to know how you feel about all the conversations that go on right now. I mean, because online is a whole different beast. Everyone's fighting and debating and making lists and Mount Rushmore lists, but do you really feel, do you agree that you're the best? Because we feel like you are, but how do you feel about these debates and where you sit in them? And who do you think is on a level or coming up to that as well? I'm curious to know how you feel about that.
I mean, I hope my pedigree speaks to the reality of how you feel about me.
Mm, boom.
You know what I'm saying? I hope that I don't have to say it, that you'll say it for me.
Yeah, man.
You heard that intro, Usher. The king.
right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Based off of the fact that I have put in the type of work that warrants that kind of, you know, recognition. And by the way, heavy is the head he who wears the crown.
That's right.
So what I say in that moment is, it's like a baton. Everybody has their time and their opportunity to be able to hold the baton. And what I'm hoping I do while I got it is let you know that true entertainment matters. Singing with your microphone on actually still matters.
It still matters.
Writing and creating songs that, you know, blend worlds together and creating new ideas, new, you know, collaborative, you know, evolved versions of R&B, they matter. Whether I am a king of it or not, that ain't my main concern.
Mm.
I'm telling you, I've done the work and my record speaks for itself. What concerns me is the fact that R&B in some way is not held in the same, you know, regard as other genres of music. I think that as the years have gone by and we've created this merge between hip hop and R&B, the commercial viability of R&B has gone into a very specific space.
Mm.
And at times people claim that it may feel older, or it may feel of a past generation of people or demographic of people in order to have relevance. That's not true. I do think that the ballad, you know, is not as strong as it used to be. Can it become a number one hit smash record, number one pop record for the entire world to sing? I wish that we had more of it. I wish that we had more people who understood how incredible R&B was, and the fact that even though an artist may become popular, they still are considered an R&B artist no matter how far they go. If you don't recognize them as that, that's on you. Us as consumers, specifically for black people, we kill ourselves by not celebrating ourselves. When I think about rock and roll, I see the legacy of it held up by the patrons who enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I see it being held up by the establishment that celebrates it,
right,
as it relates to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and so many others. And this is not, you know, something against establishment. I'm just saying, I think that R&B deserves to be seen in the same way, because all of those other genres of music that have evolved from R&B wouldn't be if it weren't for jazz and then blues and then rhythm and blues and then so on from there. They gave us something in their creation that deserves to be celebrated. So who gives a fuck about being a king or not when you see an entire industry being torn apart and almost devalued? I think that we should really focus on that. I love that I have worked hard. I love that I can say my record speaks for itself. But I want to open doors so that there's more people like myself. I like that you would say, you know, hey, put him in the same light as the legendary artist that did this, whether it was Michael or James Brown or Luther Vandross or Prince, because I only have so many years to do what I'm going to do. And then I'll move on to something else. And then the songs of the past will be the things that you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be doing something else. And I'm just hoping that the legacy of that is held up. You'll find a reason to fall out of love with any entertainer that gave you the greatest songs ever.
Right.
And they'll be a king today and a martyr or either a joker tomorrow. What I'm telling you right now is that R&B needs to live. R&B needs to be celebrated and lifted up in a different way than it has been. And I think that we, the consumers, have to be able to do that. We got to make it more of a priority. We got to show that, yo, we invest money in those tickets where R&B artists are doing shows. Artists who are R&B have to invest money into their shows and into themselves to make sure that they keep it alive and keep it up. That's why I do what I do. I damn near spend my whole check sometimes to make sure that you don't ever slip and forget how important the R&B music, entertainment, and performance is. Wow. Because I'm doing it not just for myself. That's what will make me a king.
Wow,
the fact that a king would say, let me think about my entire village.
Yeah.
A king would say, let me think about the lineage of the family that I stand on the shoulders of, and I'm carrying this baton into the next space as I explore new territories and dominate in some ways in a new space, in the literal sense of being a king. So for me, thank you if you call me a king, but I want R&B to last. I want R&B to be like rock and roll. I want R&B to be celebrated in, you know, on platforms, on the Nereus platforms and the Grammys platforms, the way all of those other genres are, pop categories, funk categories, musical categories, classical categories. I want you to celebrate R&B in that way. I want you to never forget that Chuck Berry did something incredible for us. I want you to never forget that Buddy Bolden, as he created jazz, did something that would light our way. I want you to never forget that, you know, the guys who were trying to figure out how to take it to the next space, whether it was James Brown or, you know, Fela Kuti or Bob Marley and all of those guys were trying to find ways to make this a world conversation. We're trying to find a way to make sure that people would never forget that rhythm and blues. Mm. That they were advocating for something bigger.
Yeah,
the establishment matters, man.
That's the best damn answer I've ever heard to that damn question ever in my life. Real talk, no bullshit.
We sound crazy.
Speaking of R&B, you actually got on My Way album, you got a couple R&B male groups on that album. Members of Jagged Edge and members of Blackstreet are on the My Way album. What's your favorite R&B album of all time? And do you think R&B male group, a proper R&B male group, can make a splash today?
Mm, good question.
My greatest album right now is My Way. And it's just because it's the priority of the day.
Talk your shit. I love it.
Sure. There's many other albums that I've been inspired by and artists, as I tell you. I ain't shy about all the people who have been influenced, you know, or have been influences that have created the things that I love. But one thing that I will say and love and appreciate about this industry is, you know, collaboration is what makes it what it is.
Right.
To be able to have, you know, Teddy Riley and Blackstreet be a part of my first album. I mean, be a part of My Way is the sure thing that makes it what it is. I think that we as R&B artists need to collaborate more. I think if we understand, you know, kind of like villages, right? In the village, everybody does something different. But if you put all of it together, you become powerful. You become strong. You become, you know, magnificent. If you got one of the greatest writers. You know, when I think about how Quincy Jones puts together albums, right? And the time that he made what he made with Michael. It was the, you know, Brothers Johnson and incredible writers that came in and incredible musicians who just came in to play a specific instrument. Same goes in this time. When we collaborate, we make things that are bulletproof. The best background vocals, the best vocal arrangement, the best writing, the best vocal performance that don't just happen by way of one person unless you're Prince. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but yeah,
I'm
yeah,
telling
yeah.
you, it is a matter of collaboration that makes great things. You know, I had Monica.
And we danced and fell in love on the
Lil Kim, and Biggie was supporting that, you know, as we worked on Just Like Me for My Way.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Strictly for those sick, what? Cause if the first one is a nine, they a buck behind. I live my rhyme at the same time. Can't find myself laying up if you ain't paying up.
JD was giving all of what it is that was inspiring us. And sometimes it came from things that were cultural at the moment, like Poe Pimp or Twista. And was like, yo, let's find the coolest way to make like a new type of ballad, a ballad that's going to make hip-hop cats love it, because it has to still be cool and have a bit of edge in order for the world to love it.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And then there's Jagged Edge, who many times doesn't even get the recognition for being a part of Nice and Slow. Like, they came in and put the final touches on Nice and Slow at the end of the session.
People don't know
that's
that,
how
yo.
We used to roll. We literally would be in a session, and if you were in and you heard something, you would do it. By the way, I'm watching in this time, hip-hop artists continue to do it.
Yeah.
Whether it's Kid Cudi or Travis Scott or Kanye West, they be in sessions with each other, and if they feel like they got a part that they don't understand, that person steps in and they give that little punch that just pushes it over the edge.
Right.
The more we do that, the more bulletproof the song is, man.
Yeah,
collaboration.
Crazy.
Hey, baby, tell me what you wanna do.
It's 7 o'clock on the dot. I'm in my drop top, cruising the streets. Oh yeah, I got a real pretty, pretty little thing that's waiting for me. I pull up, anticipating.
For Nice and Slow, speaking of, I mean, I know there was your first number one Hot 100 Billboard single, written by yourself and JD and Manuel Seal. Is it true that the song took 4 hours to record? Like, literally, I've read that it was from composition to recording, it took 4 hours.
Yeah, it was one of them special ones. I think JD was, he was mad. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I think that all producers are trying to create the thing that is bulletproof, and he went in there with a vengeance. Mm. I don't remember exactly what had happened, but I gave him motivation and he knew what he was after. And I think, you know, the A&Ring of L.A. Reid brought it to a different level. I think that he challenged JD. What he said to JD made him like go for blood. And when you're in that go mode, when you're in that flow, because I think, you know, Nice and Slow came later on, and it was like, yeah, you got it, but we needed one more. Mm. You know, L.A. challenged him even after hearing Just Like Me and Nice and Slow. He was like, "That I need more." That's how much of a perfectionist L.A. Reid is. Mm. He's like, yo, I need more.
Yeah.
Like, we just gave you like one of the coolest, most flyest, unique ballads that anybody would ever make. He's like, I need more.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, yeah. Listen, that that song will not and should not die. I mean, that's a TikTok trend. It's a cultural moment where it was Usher at 7 o'clock. Every single day I see that online.
Let me take you to a place nice and quiet. There ain't no one better to interrupt. Ain't got a rush. I just wanna take it nice and slow.
Now, baby, tell me what you wanna do with me.
Crazy!
We haven't touched on the videos yet. And the videos and the visuals were equally as influential. I could firmly speak as a kid growing up in New York that I definitely practiced trying to walk out of my shoes. At the end of You Made Me Wanna, several times to try and impress girls, it didn't really work out that I wasn't as good as you were. But the videos were fresh and new. as little black kids coming, we hadn't seen it quite like that. People who looked like us, our age, dressed like we wanted to dress. So I'm not sure if you knew how influential that was, but I would love you to speak on your involvement in the visual aspect of My Way and the style, the choreography. All that stuff was really, really a part of the culture that changed everything for a lot of people. So
you have to leave space for the miraculous to happen. And the magic of it all coming together. I wish that I could say I knew what I was doing. I wasn't. I was just keeping it as raw as I possibly could. Here's what my approach was. If it's going to work, it's going to work in an arena, or it's going to work in a talent show. That means I've created a moment. I was so fixed on creating my own moments because that's what Michael and all of the guys who I was inspired by did. They did things as performers to make you remember. And for me, I was like, I want to dance out of my shoes. I want to pull my pants down. I want to skate. I want to do things that nobody else has done. And then L.A. was like, yo, we're going to take this video to Paris and we're going to spend $1 million with Hype Williams, because Hype was doing those $1 million videos back then. But for You Make Me Wanna, the truth is we shot 2, maybe 3 videos to make one. And the one that you know, ended up being the most powerful out of it, because we started with this idea of like this multiplicity. It's like I wanted to have all of these different characters that represented my personality.
Okay.
And if you look at the video, you'll see it, because there's a time when there's like 6 ushers. So we had to do take after take after take after take. And then we did takes where it was just me and my crew, and we were literally dancing, and we came up with this idea of me dancing out of my shoes. We would just sit in the room and just try to think of things that the same way you would, you know, when you back in those days, when you were putting together your show for the talent show,
mm-hmm.
like what's going to shock them and make them be like, oh, that was so cool that he managed to do that with no money, with no special effects, no lights, but just something that would be so memorable that you could do it in a talent show and people would clap and people would go crazy.
Right, right, right.
So that's just showbiz.
Yeah, showbiz though. Showbiz is so key that people overlook that practicing and rehearsing and just thinking about that stuff makes a difference, man.
Yeah, you got to practice. People be thinking that, you know, this shit is just, okay, turnkey, you just literally walk on the stage and miraculously create an incredible show. No, it's hours, days, thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, references, concepts, ideas thrown out there, things that are authentic to your personality, finding creative ways to do things that are memorable. Give people something to remember.
Speaking of the stage, you are currently headlining your Vegas residency, My Way. I mean, it's the talk of everybody. Everyone's buzzing about it.
Everybody.
Our co-host raved about it. He only had one note. He said, put thank you back in the set list. That was the only thing he said. Well, he said everything else. He said the show is incredible. But I want to just ask you, I mean, because it's sold out. If you ain't got your tickets for this year, sorry for you. It's sold out. Go see it next year in March when the kicks back off. But Usher, how does it feel, the love that you're receiving from this Vegas run? Like, how does this feel?
God is good, man. You know, through all of the things that I've managed to go through in my life, the one thing that brings me more happiness is making people happy through my music. So yeah, when I'm out there on the stage, I just give it back to God, you know what I'm saying, for continuing to allow me to do this and showing me by way of those applause and also to these sold out tickets that people care about what I have to offer. And you know, I'm very happy. You're right, it is sold out. I decided to extend it so 2023 people can see it, because I'm getting such a high demand to do it in Vegas. That don't stop me putting out an album. I'm going to do that. But it feels good, man.
It should feel good. I mean, we had Tevin Campbell on a few months ago. I spoke to him actually after the Vegas show. He was so grateful for that opportunity, you pulling him out on stage. So salute to you, King, for really just, again, keeping R&B alive. But Tevin was singing your praises just about the whole experience after the show. So thank you.
And the same goes for Tevin.
Speaking of Tevin, I'm curious to know real fast, because the topic was, can we talk, right? And that it was there was like a tug of war between who should get it. I'm curious to know if there are any other songs out there that we weren't aware.
No, there wasn't. There was no tug of war. I was never presented that song. I was signed to LaFace Records, and I think it was during a time when L.A. Reid and Face were, you know, kind of either separating or having conversations of separation. So he didn't participate on my first album. By the time they had worked it out and resolved things, I think LA had moved to Arista Records. And, he then participated in my way. It was a bit tough for me because, you know, Face had been an inspiration for me before I had been signed to him in L.A. Reid's label, whether it was Midnight Stars songs that he did or the Deal songs that he did or either songs that he did for himself or furthermore, the songs that he did for Bobby Brown, who was the biggest influence for me. Mm. There have been a few times in my life that there's either been a song that somebody offered me. Most of the time, I'll either cut the song, try to hold the song, but yeah, if I had Can We Talk, it would have definitely come out and I would have sang it and it would have been a classic on me. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it and I'm okay with that. And if there had ever been any tension between me and Tevin, I was only hoping to show the celebration because we respect each other. Absolutely. You know, I celebrate what he does as an artist. I celebrate all R&B artists, especially the
And ones. He celebrated you. And he celebrated you when he was on the podcast as well, Usher. It was all love. So I just, again, it was just excited for you and everything happening in Vegas. But we're looking forward to celebrating you here in Tennessee soon at the museum. Yeah. We're talking with your team about doing something super special. So listeners, stay tuned. More to come on that front. And Usher, you coming up on 30 years.
30 years.
Call me a Mac. That was the word. You know what I mean?
30.
Let's go. Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, man.
We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. And y'all continue to do it. Like I say, establishment is all that will matter in time.
Yes,
so
sir.
Celebration to y'all.
Thank you, man.
Thank you so much. We'll see you in Vegas, brother.
Thank you.
Peace.
We sound crazy.
Yo, great conversation.
Wow.
Usher, man. King of R&B.
Come on, man. He dropped gems on gems.
Gems. No, and Timon, you see, I held you down. I told him your set list note.
Yeah.
I said, man, you put that thank you
That was my only gripe about the show. I'm like, man, he showed no love to that first album because that first album got some joints on it, for real.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you could have sub one of the Oomph records for
I like the Oomph. Like,
not Oomph.
I mean, OMG was a good Oomph.
They were cool, but you know, I wanted to hear Think of You Too.
He got your message. He got your note.
Maybe next time you go back, there'll be Tevin and less Oomph. Oomph.
Oomph. <oomph. laughs> That's so funny.
We sound crazy.
But yo, we also had the pleasure of catching up with one of the creative architects behind My Way.
Mm-hmm.
The man himself, J.D., Jermaine Dupri.
Legend.
Mr. So-So Def.
Legend in his own right. I feel like, how could you not discuss with the person who was the partner brainchild in the album, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you hear Usher talk about how they have a rapport and how they study each other and how they spend a lot of time together on the album. So, again, we want to hear how these albums come together, not just, the songs are hot, but what's the magic?
Yeah, yeah.
So, without further ado, let's get the other half of the convo from the other legend, Mr. Jermaine Dupri.
All right, so early in the episode, we had the pleasure of talking to Usher, talking about all things My Way, but we could not have this conversation and this celebration without talking to this next gentleman. Let me just, a few stats. Just give for him
a
y'all
few stats.
Just a few.
Drop the receipts,
you know what
please.
I mean? I mean,
receipts.
He is the founder of So Def Recordings. I mean, that's a huge one. That's everybody from the Brat to Escape to Jagged Edge. That's a receipt. That's a CVS receipt in CVS. His own right. As obviously, he's a Grammy Award winner. He's got too many other awards to name right now. He's produced from everybody from Mariah to Escape to Crisscross.
You see what I'm saying?
But even, like, let's even go more recently with Divisions, If I Get Caught, which is the song that's got me in a lot of trouble personally. and also Ari Lennox Pressure, which is another one of our anthems
my
over here.
Bang, talking about. My bang, jam.
So, you know, as he coming up on his 30th anniversary of So Def next year, which we're going to talk about a little later, but ladies and gentlemen, the creative architect and who contributed some of the greatness to My Way, the one, the only, Jermaine Dupri.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's jump right in, man. My Way, you know, and take us back. You know, I was watching something on YouTube. I think it's a documentary coming out about My Way. And in the documentary, you said this was your first time producing a solo act. And so I want to know, how did you pick the sound for My Way?
For the most part, I didn't pick it. I just was just going with my gut and with my, you know, what I felt like was missing, I think, at the time. That's what I was trying to do. And I also feel like, you know, I was 25 years old at the time that this happened. So I was, you know, at the heart of being this younger guy in the music industry that was trying to do things in a younger sounding way than the people that was already on the record, like the LA and Babyface, the Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis's and these people of the world. I was like, I'm from the South. So I was just trying to find my little niche. So I was trying to do things that didn't sound so normal at that time.
Mm. You did such a good job of marrying what was classic R&B in terms of like respecting the space for vocalists to sing and show off their voice, but also keep it in a way where like the hood could understand. Young people could understand, yeah. But still, you know, our parents and grandparents still were okay with you listening to it. And that's just the hardest balance to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious to know, Usher spoke a little bit about y'all's creative process and bouncing back and forth from each other, ideas and, you know, voice notes. I mean, I don't know if it was voice notes back then, but I'd love to hear about the process of how y'all two masterminds came together for these ideas, because the ideas are You Make Me Want as a crazy idea, Nice and Slow was a crazy idea,
so the as title a song, track
title it? Track yeah. Right, crazy idea. So as a songwriter in the crew, I'm always curious to know how did y'all work together, how did that relationship build between you and Usher?
Well, like for me, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing, but I had to learn Usher's algorithms. I had to figure out what made him excited. Mm. Right, and it was like, What could I do that made him excited? What was I doing that Usher liked about me in the first place, right? So I just started trying to figure out how to incorporate as much of that in his music as possible. And then one thing I learned in the process of working with him was that one of his algorithms was that if I made him sing about something that he actually did or something that was actually on his mind or sitting in his stomach, his performance was going to be better. Mm. Right. And that's something I learned. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, people give R&B artists songs. They just give them songs and say, sing this. And a lot of times the R&B artists don't have anything to do with where the song came from. They're just singing it because they're a great voice and it's a great song. But with Usher, he's an incredible voice. But his voice become even more incredible if you give him a song that's relatable to his life or that's relatable to what he's feeling at the time, right? So I started noticing that this is the guy he wanted to be. He wanted to be this person he wanted to be. He wanted to do it his way. And his way was him singing about him. Singing about himself and giving people a real look at who Usher actually was. Because prior to that, Can You Get With It and his first album, I feel like these were songs that Devontae and them just wrote. And it was just like, here go a song. They didn't actually sit down with Usher and discuss with him what he was going through. By the way, he was too young for that to even happen. I guess, maybe. I mean, you know, but my writing style is that's how I did Crisscross. I had to figure out what was their algorithm. Mm. And that's what made them become better rappers, because I started fueling them with songs that they felt like they wrote themselves, right? And the stories became things that they felt like they were saying without Jermaine Dupri already. Same thing with Usher. The stories became something that felt like, you know, and by the way, I got better at it. I got better at it to Confessions, to the point where Usher gave you such an incredible performance of Confessions that people didn't even believe. They believed that he had a baby on the way. They believed his whole story.
Right, right.
They believed every bit of it. You know what I mean? So it was just a technique that I saw, and nobody told me. I just grasped and learned it immediately, because when you're in the studio, you write a song for somebody, you give it to them, you could tell from their performance if they really like it, if they don't, right?
Yeah.
And that's all I wanted. I wanted the best performance out of Usher, because I had never done a male artist before. So this wasn't just on him. I had to do something to impress myself.
Mm. That's a sign of a great producer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is knowing how to find the truth in it and still make it commercial and fun. That's genius right there.
Crazy.
JD, I'm curious to know, do you have a favorite song on My Way?
Yeah, Nice and Slow. One because it became Usher's first number one top 100 record. And
three times platinum recently, too, by the way. Congratulations. Three times platinum.
Yeah, three times platinum. But at the same time, this is the one song that I believed was going to change Usher's life.
Mm.
And I feel like that's the one song that I wrote, and it was so effortlessly. Like, I didn't get one time where I was trying to figure out a word. It was like every single word of it just was coming out.
Mm.
7 o'clock, on the drop top, cruising on the streets. It just felt like it was like the most effortless. And I ran to L.A. and I posted this video of me talking about this, where I ran to L.A. and I thought that this was it. I'm like, this is the song. He wasn't so sold on the song like I was. But he was looking for something else for Usher. He didn't think that was Usher's first single. And he probably thought that's why he pushed me to go through it again, that the song was so good that he was like, this guy could probably write another song, you know, just as good if I tell him this ain't it. I don't know his scheme. I ask him every day, all the time, like, what made you tell me no? Blah, blah, blah. But regardless, that song prompted me to write You Make Me Wanna, which also is one of my highly favorites because of the style of what I'm telling you. It was very technical what I did with My Way, right? But the style of You Make Me Wanna and how I reversed the story from what the story actually is, to make Usher be the person and to make this other person be the person and this other person. I got that style from, it's a movie called Usual Suspects, right? And they kept talking about Kaiser Soze in this movie, and the guy Kaiser Soze would go to the police station and tell people myth about this person, Kaiser Soze, but he would actually be Kaiser Soze.
Mm.
And he was sitting in there, you know, and the police would... And what he would do is he would look around the police station and see words, and he would grab those words and put them into his story while he was talking to them. And that's pretty much what I was doing with You Make Me Wanna. I had the story. I flipped the story around to make Usher the guy that I was in the story. And, you know, so many different flips and ways of what it is. So in a writing style... And like story-wise, You Make Me Wanna probably is, you know, right neck and neck with Nice and Slow. But Nice and Slow, I felt the most confident about.
Mm. Man, I'm talking about a classic.
Classic, man.
That's as fresh today as it was back then.
Crazy!
Who came up with the rap part, the U-S-H-E-R-R-A-Y-M-O-N-D?
Right.
Call out my name. They call me U-S-H-E-R-R-A-Y-M-O-N-D. And baby, tell me what you want to do with me.
Well, me and Usher both was coming up with, you know, because Usher wanted to rap, but I wasn't sold that he could rap, right? So, but he wanted to rap so much. He wanted to rap so bad because he was just like, "You made Criss Cross a rapper, make me a rapper." He wanted to rap. He wanted to rap a lot. And at the time, we was listening to the Poe Pimp record, you know, the Poe Pimp Twister song. And the way that they spelt their name in that record, the whole song was like that, actually. They were spelling like that. They was doing a whole song like that. So we actually just borrowed that from them to spell his name. And when I did the rap, I was almost like, "Usher, you can't do this," you know, because I was like, "He ain't no rapper." But he was Usher's a guy that when he wants to do something, he will get it done. Yeah. And he did it. So then at that point, I was like, "Listen, it's nobody on R&B radio right now that's young, that's got a song like this, that has somebody rapping, that got the person rapping in the song." I just thought Nice and Slow was the one. You know what I mean? Just perfect for me.
We sound crazy.
You talked a little bit earlier about like his first record and how some of those songs weren't tailored for him. What did you see in him, I guess, from the first go around that made you feel like, you know what, I can do something with him and actually
nothing,
give him?
Actually.
Well, there you have it.
There's that real talk right there.
No, listen, because I was confused and blinded by not wanting to work with more kid artists. You know, it's funny, I always see people say, maybe try to diss me and say, "Jermaine Dupri, all he does is work with kid artists." I didn't want to work with no more kid artists after Criss Cross, right? But this is something that God put into me. You know, when God calls you to do something, you got to go do it. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? And I can't sit there and act like I'm not good at making young people into millionaires and worldwide superstars. I have that talent. I've done it multiple times. So it's, and by the way, it's something that I promise you I did not want to do. So when you asked me that about Usher, I wasn't paying no attention to him. I thought he could sing, but I was just like, I don't care. He's a kid. If he gets older, I might work with him. That's what my mind was. But lo and behold, the universe still shifted it where it was like, "Jermaine, this kid needs you. LaFace is asking for a remix. You should do it." So then when I said, "Cool, I'm going to do the remix," I thought I was just doing a remix. And then L.A. called me. He was like, "Jermaine, can you add a bridge to Think of You and make it more of a song? We think we can make it more of a song. We have a better chance as a single." This was God at that point. It was him saying, "Do what I put in you. And do it." And once I did the remix, I added this bridge, right? And when I put the bridge in the song, everybody at LaFace in LA and all of them, they heard Usher's tone. And they also heard Usher singing, because they was concerned about his voice, and they was concerned that he wasn't going to be able to transition into the next era of what he was supposed to go into. And none of that bothered me. I figured out a way for Usher to sing where he would, like I said, his algorithm, and it's something that he wanted to do. So when I wrote this bridge for My Way, for Think of You, he killed it. And they was just like, "You the guy that needs to do his album." Wow. And like right then at that point, like I said, that's when I stopped fighting what God had made me do. What God put me here to do, I stopped fighting it at that point because I'm like, "Listen, I didn't even ask for this job."
Yeah.
It's not even a job. I was like sending songs and trying to be a part of Usher's album, and you know, never did I ask LA or nothing. I didn't ask for this. So people came to me and was like, "We want to give you Usher. We want you to take him and do what you did with Criss Cross, teach him, clothe him, write songs, blah, blah, blah." That's how they gave him to me. And I was just like, "Oh, okay, cool. And like I said, going into this, I never had worked with an R&B artist before. So to me, initially, it was just like, yeah, I got this check to work this little boy. that's initially what it was. But you know, prior to that, I never thought this would be a classic album. I never knew that it would be something we'd be talking about 25 years later. None of that. I can't, you know, like I said, it's all, I guess God has this written for me to do this.
Absolutely.
You talk about how at one point you didn't want to like work with any more kids, but you've always had an amazing connection to the youth, and you've been able to bring up so many kid acts and turn them into worldwide stars. Why do you, what is it in your mind that makes you feel like, you know what, I see the potential in this person or this group. Let me groom them to becoming what I know they can
be. It's just paying attention, you know? Yeah. It's just paying attention. Like I said, when Usher did his first album, I'm sure they just wrote songs and was like, here, right? Mm-hmm. When me and Usher went in to do My Way, I asked him, what do you want to talk about? Mm. I asked him, where do you want to go with this? So the whole idea, the word My Way, I had nothing to do with that. That was all Usher. Mm. Usher's idea was, I want my album to be done. I want to do it my way. And he kept being so strong about it that I was just like, we got to make a song called My Way. You know what I mean? At that point. So I'm the guy that if you show me what you want to do, I will basically tailor make your suit to fit you and nobody else. And that's basically what I did with Usher. It was like, I paid attention, and that's basically that becomes my production style. I pay attention to the people I go in the studio with, and I allow their words and their energy and their life to fuel what I do. Mm.
It's psychology and therapy too. You gotta listen.
Yeah.
To what artists are feeling and saying.
As kids, like, Jermaine, I'm from Macon, Georgia. So even talking to you right now is just crazy because, I mean, being from Georgia, it was always Jermaine Dupri. Like, we looked up and still do look up to you. And so even as kids, it made us feel like, you know what, it was possible.
Crazy!
Hey, JD, I got to ask you, Manuel Seal was your one of your collaborators on this project. How did you two connect? Because you all made such greatness together, even
so
beyond
many.
Usher. But specific to My Way, how did you and Manuel connect years ago?
Well, me and Manuel, once I got my label, because this is the thing people don't understand. I did Crisscross whole album by myself, and nobody helped me. You know, Joe the Butcher actually was mixing the record, but as far as the production, I did everything, keyboards, all of these things. But I knew I wasn't the greatest keyboard player, and I knew where I wanted to go. I didn't have those keyboard chops. I didn't have those piano chops to go. Because I knew once Crisscross blew up, I said I wanted to sign Escape. So once I saw that Crisscross blew up, I was like, okay, if I'm going to make an R&B album, I need a partner that can play keyboards and piano and give me that other side that I don't have. You know. And I was young. I didn't know what was going on, but I always thought like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. I'm like, why is it two people? If they're just as good as each other, they don't need each other. So one of them does something and the other one does something else. Same thing with LA and Babyface. I didn't know the difference between the two, but I just was like, it's two of them for some reason, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I know what I don't have. So if I find somebody who has what I believe I don't have, I don't care if they're my partner, because I believe you should always partner with people that are better than you.
Yeah,
Don't partner up with somebody that's just as equal. You ain't gonna get nothing. You gotta get somebody that's better than you that could push you to become better, and you'll push them. So I went on a hunt to try to find a partner, and just so happened, this guy called my dad, I think, and told him that he had a writer that he wanted to come to Atlanta and work with me, and he was an older guy. So people didn't know how it was going to work. Because when I met Manuel, I was, you know, I had to be, we did My Way, I was 25. I met Manuel when I was 19, right, when I was at least 20 years old. So we did Escape first. We did the first album we did was Escape. And Manuel came to me, and he was like 35 almost, you know what I mean, 10 years to almost 20, 15 years older than me. So his musical background and his musical crate and the the chops that he had was so much deeper musically than me. A lot of people didn't think it was going to work, but he actually, you know, respected what I was saying, and he also fell into the groove of how we started working, where he would listen to what I was saying and he could really translate it and bring it to life. And that's it. We had our practice on the first Escape album. We had more practice on the Jagged Edge album, and then it was time for My Way.
It's crazy.
And then I mean, a lot of those artists, I mean, Jagged Edge is on My Way, right?
Yeah, Nice and Slow.
Nice and Slow. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And of course, you've definitely had a very successful run with Monica. She's on the album. So, I mean, like, it became a family affair after that, really. I mean, it feels like, yes, Usher was signed to L.A. and Babyface, but it really was you kind of orchestrating the culture of that project. And that's to me why you're an architect of culture and sound, because it's not just about I gave this person a hit, I gave that person a hit. It's building a whole world of how you dress, how you talk, how you dance, how you live, who you date, where you party, what you drink, the whole nine yards. So were you aware? I mean, I'm sure you know now because we're celebrating and 25 years later, but was that in your mind, like, I'm trying to let people know, you know, how we lived? Because I'm from New York, and a lot of this stuff was my introduction to what was happening in the South. How y'all sang, what y'all listened to. So was that on your mind? Like, I'm trying to put this on the map, I'm trying to put this whole town on the map, or were you just in the studio trying to get the record right? Did you have that foresight?
I mean, I wanted people to respect Atlanta 100%, and I was trying to figure out. But I always knew that I had to make... I only felt like the way that you guys would respect Atlanta outside of Atlanta was that the music had to be top tier. And it had to be competitive with everything else that was going on in the rest of the world. That was the only way we was going to break through. And that's all I was focused on. I was just focused on trying to make the best music possible. Because I felt like if I made the best music possible, then people would have to pay attention to Atlanta at that point.
Yeah, it worked.
Speaking of Atlanta, I went to Clark Atlanta. And I remember when I first got there, I saw the big billboard, "Welcome to Atlanta, home of So-So Def Records." Tell me about the marketing strategy behind that. Were you marketing yourself? Were you marketing your company? How did that work for you?
Well, it was something that my dad told me we should do. I was just like, whatever, because that's what it was. Just like trying to figure out. Everybody's trying to figure out ways to continue to market So-So Def and make it the biggest thing in the world. I later learned that Berry Gordy had a billboard in Detroit for Motown.
I didn't know that.
And I figured that somewhere my dad must have got that idea from there. If he didn't, then, God bless him. But I feel like, if some of that energy, like I said, is seeped through. Berry Gordy is my idol. It was something that he did with Motown. So it's just like, it was something, like I said, this is a very God-driven profession that I have, a career that I have, basically. It's just things happen like that I don't really have a real hold on. They just actually happen. So it was just something that was just like, let's put up this billboard. I know I wasn't paying that much attention to it because I was spending too much money on it that I probably would have been like, no. Like, the billboard, for real, the billboard cost me $10,000 a month. It was up for 10 years straight.
What?
Yeah. It was huge, too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I remember seeing
that. That was a thing coming from Macon, Georgia, and seeing that on 75.
It made an impact. You know what I'm really saying? Did. Like, it made you the mayor.
Definitely made an impact in my pocket, too.
JD, we got to thank you, brother, for coming on the episode this week. Amazing. Thank you for your time. We're looking forward to celebrating So-So Def 30th anniversary with you next year.
Got to do that.
Stay tuned. More to come, listeners. So we're going to do something really big here in Nashville, Tennessee with JD and the So-So Def family. So more to come.
Yeah, be on the lookout for that Division album since y'all talked about it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we actually finished and it's on its way.
Oh, man, we're looking forward to it.
We're going to play some of that in the episode. We got you.
Yes, sir.
For sure.
All right, thank you.
We sound crazy.
Cool. Man, so much knowledge, man.
Knowledge.
So much musical history.
He kept saying it's a God thing.
It's a God thing. It is, and it really is. Music is a spiritual thing. And it so is. For people of that magnitude to acknowledge that, you know what I'm saying? That only helps the culture.
I feel like Jermaine Dupri is famous, right? For sure, and definitely respected. But when you hear him start to talk about like how he's coming up with these songs, his vision.
Yeah.
His vision. Not just even Usher, but when Crisscross and Escape.
Mariah.
It's got to put even a little bit more respect on his name because he really is a visionary.
Yeah.
And a producer and a songwriter. So
genius, man. Shout out to JD, man. We appreciate you coming through and looking forward to celebrating So Def 30th.
Yeah, man, next that's going to be fun.
It's going to be dope. But he getting people in trouble out here with that Division record. If I recall. You know, JD, that record getting us in trouble out here. You know what I mean?
Play that, man. Play it.
Clean.
Truth is, if I get caught cheating, that don't mean I don't love you.
Fucking them girls, I was gonna say it
again. We sound crazy.
Esther Roll Award.
Looking at my role is about that time. So we do a thing here called the Esther Roll Black Excellence Award. You're probably wondering what the hell that is. I'm going to tell you what it is. Timon, one of his top 10 favorite albums, Timon's personal Rolling Stone top 10 albums, is an album by Esther Roll called The Garden of My Mind. It's a gospel album that moves him. And so he shared it with us. We were so moved that we said, you know, Esther's not getting enough respect if she's doing all this. So we named the award after her. And the whole idea really, correct me if I'm wrong, is basically just to be highlighting Black artists, entertainers, business people in our field that don't get the love they deserve. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot. So there's always a good reason to fight about this. And, you know, for short, Esther Roll, Black Excellence, Irby. So if you hear Irby, that's what it is.
Irby.
We nominate someone each, we vote it down, and then someone gets the award every time we do it. So I feel like we just open the floor. Who y'all got? Who y'all think needs some love?
So who you got this week, Phil?
Well, you know what? In the spirit of this episode is all about all things my way. We talked to Usher, we talked to Jermaine Dupri in this episode, and we talked about this next gentleman a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. You know what I mean? I want to celebrate. He's, you know, he produced on My Way. He's produced with Escape. He's produced with Mariah, TLC, and so many others. The nomination for the Esther Roll Black Excellence Award this week is Manuel Seal.
Ooh.
I second that.
Second it?
I second that.
I third it.
Fourth.
Is it unanimous?
That's rare.
Yeah.
I've never seen this happen.
That's
rare. Because we got to show those guys some love, man. They've so much a part of the compositions of those stuff.
Yeah.
And they don't often get the shine, so... That's what Esther Roll represents, so we got to give it to him.
I like that.
Love it. Congratulations, Manuel Seal, the recipient of the Esther Roll Black Excellence Award.
Crazy!
So this last week has been crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, we've lost some great people.
Heavy hitters, man. Some powerhouses.
Yeah. Here locally in Nashville, Dr. Paul T. Kwame at Fisk University.
Yeah.
Passed away a few days ago. Mm. So our condolences. Dr. Kwame, I had the pleasure of meeting him at Lewis York's album release party, at Fisk. And Matthew Knowles and I had a call with him about, you know, doing some, you know, things for the students at Fisk. So just,
They just got the Grammy last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's taking them to like higher heights.
Yeah.
Definitely will be missed locally, but also if you understand the history of the Fisk Jubilee Singers,
yeah,
which is the origin of like black music business in America too. Like the whole thing, they went to London to the Queen, who we've also lost.
Yeah,
this we lost the Queen too.
They put Black American music on the map worldwide.
Absolutely.
So he's very important.
He was there for 28 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
So that's one.
And then PMB Rock.
Which is insane.
That was crazy because I hadn't been to that Roscoe's several times.
Same. Yeah. Same.
That whole thing of just like.
So unfortunate.
How he's so young. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying? And just the tragedy of it and the social media aspect of it is creepy. Yeah.
30 years old, man.
That's still hard to process because that's wild. But may he rest in peace and also sending a lot of love and comfort to his family. That's rough.
That's really rough.
And last but definitely not least, Jesse Powell.
Come on,
that
man.
That one shocked me.
Yeah.
I was shocked too.
I didn't know he was ill. I didn't know. There's just a lot. Yeah, that was a tough one. All of them were tough. But it's very shocking.
Yeah, Jesse hits me hard because I growing up singing, I wanted to sing like that. And I remember in my sixth grade talent show, I sang You. And I still have the tape somewhere.
Did you win?
I don't think it was like a winning thing, but like, yeah.
It was like, did you win?
Yeah, I used to go around the house singing all his records from that Bout It album. I think it was called Bout It. It was like a yellow CD. I think I still have it somewhere.
I remember the CD.
He was amazing.
I think everyone was shocked by that.
And the crazy thing is, the other week I was just playing from his very first album that also has You on it, the Enchantment medley. He did a whole like medley of Enchantment songs, and he has a song Glory on there, and that's like one of my favorite Jesse Powell records ever. Yeah, so that would hit me hard.
We got to show these people that we love them while they're here, because you know what I'm saying? Like, life is just so short. You know what I'm saying?
Tomorrow's
like,
not promised.
And then a lot of times they pass, and then you'd be like, oh, man, like, that was my favorite artist. But when they were alive, we wasn't hitting them on social media and telling them that. We wasn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we wasn't supporting their shows and stuff like this. So we just got to be. We got to be proactive in our love, because these people really touched our lives in a special kind of way. You know what I'm saying? And you feel that really deeply when they pass away. So
what you just said was the key. We got to be proactive with our love.
Yeah.
Period.
Dr. Paul T. Kwame, PMB Rock, and Jesse Powell. Rest in peace.
Listen, I feel like we've covered a lot.
Yeah, man.
25 years of My Way. We spoke to legendary Usher. We spoke to the legendary Jermaine Dupri.
JD. Right?
We gave Irby to Manuel Seal.
You know what I'm saying?
It's amazing. Did y'all get y'all My Way vinyl? I pre-ordered mine. Everybody, it's on Vinyl Me Please. My Way vinyl. It's colored vinyl.
I'm doing that tonight.
Limited edition. Vinyl Me Please. I know Timon ordered his.
No, I got mine.
I don't have a record player.
You don't?
No.
We got one in the studio, though.
No, I mean.
At home, you mean? Oh, at your crib?
It's a great excuse to get one.
I was just saying that so somebody could buy me one if y'all listen.
Oh, so you want the record player and the vinyl.
This is good to know. This is good to know.
That's so good. But yeah, shout out to Usher, JD. Thank you so much to Maddie at Sony Music. Andres at the Chamber Group, and Lydia for making this all happen. Melinda at Social Death Management, Mike Malden. L.A. Reid.
L.A. Reid
was behind the scenes helping pull this together,
man,
just in case y'all.
L.A. Reid.
Yeah, thank you, L.A.
Another legend.
One of my faves.
We need to get him on the podcast ASAP.
Yeah, he connecting all the other dots. L.A., come on down. You know,
come through.
The dot connector. Before we go out, we definitely want y'all to follow us, support us. We Sound Crazy everywhere. At We Sound Crazy at all social media. We're back.
Yeah.
We're back.
We Sound Crazy is back.
And we're going to be bringing y'all exclusive.
Absolutely. Shout out to the people that support us here in town, the National Museum of African American Music, NAMAM. I mean, the city of Nashville itself supports us. They said, go ahead and do this thing. We like We Sound Crazy.
Yeah, man.
Shout out to them. And as we go out, you know what I'm saying, what song y'all want to go out with? What's feeling right?
Well, it's My Way.
It's My Way.
I like it.
Yes, and also a special shout out to our producer, Mike Guru Johnson. Thank you for your hard work and everything. But on this as we go out, I think we should do Just Like Me. What y'all
yeah.
think?
Yeah, man.
Track two.
Track two on my way.
Featuring the Queen Bee, Lil' Kim.
Kim. It's been a good one, y'all. Till yeah, next man. Time.
We sound crazy.
Crazy.
You know dream house money. It's you just like me, so don't start acting
You're
funny.
The kind of girl that makes everybody feel that you're just so damn good. So damn good. But your secrets I found out, so don't deny what you're about. I know the truth.